Mike.
Hello, John.
I'm John.
I'm Mike.
And you're listening to All Yesterday's Parties.
Woo! It's the podcast where we talk about music and other things.
Yes.
Yes. Mm. Mostly music. Mm. Some other things.
Mostly music.
We also drink beverages of a high quality.
Yes, we certainly do.
God damn.
Apart from that time we had generic beers.
Yeah, which was last time.
They weren't bad.
They were all right. I mean, Theakston's all peculiar. It's always, it was just a supermarket one.
Yeah.
And we're a bit more pretentious than that.
Yes, exactly. It's all about the pretense.
Yeah.
And I'm holding on my pretense with a bottle of Staffordshire cider. Strawberry cider.
Yeah, it's very pink.
Mm.
Very champion. It goes with your eyes.
Yeah.
And I'm having Monty's Hilltop, which is a golden honey ale from Offa's Dyke. Top it. It's very pleasant. It is very nice.
Very good, very good.
Very, very pleasant. So, oh dear. Now he's firing strawberry cider out of his nose.
Yeah.
Good times. What are we going to talk about then, John? Because we normally have a bit of a preamble, don't we?
Yes, this is the bit where the preamble happens.
I like a bit of that. A bit of preamble.
Now, Mike and I are both fans of the Metal Gear franchise.
Yes, we are.
With me, it started when I got a PlayStation 2 and it had a copy of Sons of Liberty with it. And I enjoyed it and became a fan of the series from around about that point onwards.
Mm. I got into it during the original Metal Gear Solid. So not the original Metal Gears,
no.
But the first outing for Solid.
I
got
a
proper named.
Yes. I find those original Master System ones very difficult to play.
They are solid. Yeah. Appropriately, yeah. But they're incredibly difficult, as a lot of retro games are. Cause, not so much because they're difficult, but sometimes they're just a bit unfair.
Yes.
And we'll just kick your ass for no good reason. But
Okay.
Well, you can see where it all started to begin.
Yes.
Where it got so much better with Metal Gear Solid.
That's when the
proper franchise really began in my eyes.
Yeah. When the technology evolved to make a proper story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could actually start achieving the things that Kojima-san wanted to actually achieve.
And speaking of Kojima, obviously he's now left Konami.
Left or was ousted? I mean, that's a big question mark.
That is a contentious issue.
Yeah.
But Konami have just announced a new Metal Gear game.
Really?
They have.
I'm not saying that, but that's bold of them.
It is bold. They said that Metal
Gear... Is it going to be a console game? Is it going to be another... bloody pachinko.
It's console,
is it?
But it's set between Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes and Phantom Pain. So it's set in the middle of those.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't involve Snake.
Uh-huh.
If now this is a spoiler for anyone who's not played Ground Zeroes, but you know the end cutscene of Ground Zeroes.
I've played through Ground Zeroes. I've not played Phantom Pain, but I've played through Ground Zeroes. Yeah.
At the end of Ground Zeroes, there's the scene where they touch down on Mother Base as it's being destroyed, and then they rescue as many people as they can and just get the hell out.
Yeah.
In the game trailer for this new one, I think, is it Metal Gear Solid Survival or something like that, or Metal Gear Survival?
That sounds like a particularly generic name that Konami would come out with.
The trailer kind of comes in as the helicopters are leaving the sinking Mother Base.
Okay.
But instead of staying with the chopper, it cuts back to a soldier on the sinking Mother Base.
Just some rando.
Yes.
Just stood there being crap.
Yes. And then...
I'm gripped already.
Some sort of portal opens up in the sky.
What?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And pulls Mother Base, the remains of Mother Base... up through these portals, and not quite sure what's going on. A whole bunch of survivors from it wake up on some sort of, is it a parallel universe? Is it another planet? Nobody knows.
Is it a load of old bullshit that Konami just found behind the couch? You know, just thought, let's fit that onto a Metal Gear franchise.
It basically looks like soldiers from Mother Base against some strange zombie monster-y things. It doesn't look great.
This is what happens when Konami are left unattended
Yes.
with a valued franchise and without someone who actually kind of knows what they're doing standing in the way.
Yes.
And the Metal Gear games are, they fluctuate in quality, often within the same game. At least in sense being made.
Yes.
I mean, Kojima is a kind of genius. You know, he's very inventive. His
self-editing.
He needs it. Yes. He needs a bit of that, or at least needs someone bold enough to edit for him.
Yes.
But, you know, he's better than Molyneux. He just spouts out nonsense and then expects people to catch up with him.
Yes.
And never delivers half of what he actually says is going to happen. Kojima actually does deliver on some of it, and probably should actually edit more of it out.
Yeah.
But he has vision, and he has insight and foresight and hindsight, and he's got sight all over the place. You know, he's got sight beyond sight. You know, he's like liar now. I forgot what my point was. Yeah, he knows what he's doing with the Metal Gear franchise, even if no one else knows what he's doing.
Yes.
And it's becoming obvious now that he's gone out of Konami, and Konami have held on to the rights, that they don't know what's going on with it either.
No.
So probably best leaving it well alone.
I would say so. I mean,
if you're going to shoot your golden goose, then, you know.
Because it looks like it's retaining the visual quality and whatever the game, sort of some of the gameplay elements that you're used to from Ground Zeroes and Phantom Pain.
But the expectation with any Metal Gear games is going to be something different.
Yes.
And something interesting, but in keeping with the spirit of the previous games.
Going to happen.
This sounds like it's something different, but not in keeping with the spirit of the other games. And just sounds a bit stupid,
yes,
to be honest.
I'm
just pissing about.
I'm not remotely curious, has to be said.
Not from the synopsis you've given me. I mean, I'll hold back my final verdict until something more tangible comes out.
Well, there is a trailer.
I'll check that.
Yeah.
But the initial feelings, not positive.
Yeah.
I'm mostly just living in some kind of hope. That now that Kojima has gone out of Konami, he'll be able to rekindle something of the Silent Hills project.
Yes.
Under a different name, no doubt, but we're bringing something together. Because the more I heard about Silent Hills, the more it broke my heart.
Then it got cancelled.
Yeah, because you had Kojima working with Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
Awesome. And Norman Reedus, could be very interesting.
Yes.
Who's now appearing in that... That new game that Kojima's working on, the name of which escapes me, because it's another stupid bloody name. Another one of these points where Kojima needs some kind of editing, you know. Can we call it something sensible, idiot? No. Come on, it's Spawny McTweezle Diesel Weasel.
Six.
With seven E's in Weasel Diesel. And we're going to have a big cat's face on Norman Reedus' body, and it's going to be brilliant. Shut up, Kojima, you mad bastard. But yeah, it was those lads, and then there'd be a lot of interesting things happening there. But then there was also Akira Yamaoka providing some of the music, as he should be, because he is the sound of Silent Hill. But also, the one that really, I found this out actually via Flying Lotus on Twitter.
Yeah,
he posted that Junji Ito, celebrated horror manga artist, who did Utsumaki, one of my favourite manga.
Yeah,
he was going to be working on a lot of the art for the game. I've read that, and it was many, many months after I just got used to the fact that Silent Hills had collapsed, and then I found that out, and it's new ways to break my heart.
Yeah.
It would have been absolutely amazing. Junji Ito's artwork is something else.
Yeah.
Creepy and just unusual. Brilliant and so sad. I'm hoping that maybe he might be able to put, if not all of those people, he might be able to pull back some of those people to work on a new horror IP. And of course there's Alison Road, which is being developed, that has been compared to P.T., the Silent Hills trailer, and of course the Resident Evil 7, which had its own PT style trailer.
Okay.
Not exactly that. I mean, it's PT style as far as it's first person.
Yeah.
And I played it, and it's quite effective. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that. This could be a new age in survival horror.
Mm. Resident Evil is amazing. It's quite amazing that's still going. In some ways.
Well, there's always going to be some people who buy it.
Yes.
Even if it's Trump, you know, because... I'm not saying that Donald Trump...
Oh, sorry. That is exactly how I interpret what you said.
I mean, even if it's a big old fart of a game, you know, even if the game is really bad, like Donald Trump, there's always going to be some people who buy it, yes. Like Donald Trump supporters.
Yes.
They will buy any old shit. like Resident Evil 6.
Yes.
It's all coming back in a big circle. In a big circle. You see what I've done here? I'm so good at this. Yes. Resident Evil 6 was terrible. They seem to follow like kind of it works in threes.
Yes.
There'll be one that's really good, and then there'll be one that's also good, and then there'll be one that's complete arse. Because the first one was great, so innovative. The second one was brilliant.
Yeah.
The third one's a bit. Then the fourth one was like, reinvigorating the series. Yeah. And the fifth one was more of the same, but that's a weaker inventory system and a crap. AI character, and then the sixth one was, oh god, what are you doing? And now seven's coming along going, oh, something interesting and new. Yeah, much promise. So maybe it's just like that, you know, it works in trilogies of good, also good shit.
Well, it's funny, I mean, going back to the Metal Gear series, is that I actually think it's been consistently good so far.
Aside from me feeling that there needs to be a certain reining in of
narrative
silliness.
Yeah,
yeah. That sometimes I'll be sat there watching the next half hour long cutscene and thinking, what is any of this about? Mm-hmm. You lost me with the Lolly Lolly Lo. Frankly, I had no idea what that was about. The Patriots.
I really enjoyed NGS4.
Mm.
As much as anything, I actually think that the gameplay of it was so well honed.
Mm.
And I just love playing around with the Octocamo suit, to be honest.
It's so tempting just to lie on the floor and go like, oh, look at me now.
Yeah.
Oh, but look, can you see me now? Oh, you can't see me now.
And it's so much... I actually had just so much fun playing around with that. And it had a certain element... It had a certain amount of drama.
Mm.
There were huge chunks of story exposition that I did tune out during. Because
There needed to be fewer cutscenes.
Yeah.
Kojima, if you're listening, just fewer, shorter cutscenes, please.
You will be, when you get around to NGS5,
you
will enjoy it. As much for the basis that there are fewer cutscenes.
I've still not played half the DLC for Fallout 4, so I don't think I'll be playing any MGS anytime soon.
But when you do get around to it,
yeah, which I probably will.
Yeah, it's a lot more concise in terms of its storytelling.
Good.
The gameplay is massively improved. I mean, you played Ground Zeroes.
Mm.
Imagine that, but on a much bigger scale.
Yeah, the gameplay, though, it's tight as a gnat's chuff.
Yes.
It's really nicely put together.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, everything's quite intuitive.
Yeah.
So, I never done play that again, actually.
Yeah.
Just pull that out and, you know, prep myself for a bit of Ground Zero action.
It's a nice little playground to sort of demo.
You can really muck about and you know, do... I mean, it's a short bit of game, but you can attack it so many different ways.
Yeah,
you can make as much game out of it as you want. Anyway, I think we've been chatting on about Metal Gear for a good while now.
We have.
And I think we need to start talking about some music, so hit that sting, bro.
As you remember from the last time, we spoke about our slight fatigue of the top 100.
Yeah.
Of the top 100... in general, as a concept, we're going to be talking about albums that we like and that we included in our top albums of post 2000.
Mm. So, you know, the post millennium albums that we feel should have been considered for inclusion in the top 100.
Yes.
Purely, you know, subjective opinion, this.
Yes.
You may well not agree with our choices, and you may well think that we've neglected to think of some obvious brilliant albums. Mm. And that's fine. Let us know. Let us know what you think of our choices. Let us know what your choices are. You know, we're there on Twitter and Facebook and Tumblr and in John's house right now. So, you know, pop around, have a cup of tea.
Yeah. Do that.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to be comparing... we decided on my choice of Worlds Apart by And You Will Know Us by the Trail of Dead.
Yes.
And John's choice of Rated R by Queens of the Stone Age. We're going to be talking about what we love about those albums, why they think they should be included.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike, if you would like to go first. I've gone first on a few occasions now. Yeah. I think it's your turn.
All right, then. I'll take the initial leap this time. Trail of Dead, then. Yeah. Mm. I mentioned it in that last episode that we recorded, that it's generally considered that the best Trail of Dead albums are Madonna and Source Tags and Codes, which are the second and third albums respectively.
Yes.
Those are brilliant albums. Source Tags and Codes especially is fantastic. But they lead on towards the album that I think is actually their best album. I personally think it's their best album. Mm-hmm. And also is, I think, released in 2003.
Yeah.
So it fits perfectly with our brief. Because Madonna led on from the self-titled album, which is a very heavy, rough and raucous deal, and kind of Madonna starting to hone that slightly.
Yeah.
And Source Tags, again, further honing, further polishing, and just bringing in some slightly different musical ideas.
Yeah.
And then comes Worlds Apart, which is packed to the brim with ideas.
It really is.
There's so much going on.
Yeah.
Sometimes it almost feels like there's too much going on, but I don't think that personally. I think some people might.
I think
there's a lot of orchestration on some of the tracks.
It flirts with having too much going on, but just reins it self-edits.
I mean, I think there are bits where it is deliberately laying it on a bit thick.
Yes.
Like right at the start with Ode to Isis. Not that Isis.
Yeah.
The Egyptian one. It builds up slowly and hits this enormous crescendo.
Yeah.
To some screaming, and then and then it cuts itself off. And pads itself for an effect. And it's just a wonderful and dynamic album. It has kind of points of high energy and then points where it dips. I mean, Let It Dive is one of my personal favourite tracks from the album, and that is one of the quieter moments, with kind of a gentle lull. And it comes perfectly after, I think that comes after Classic Arts Showcase, which is after Caterwaul. And Caterwaul is the kind of one of the big noisy tracks.
Yes.
So you have that, and then Classic Arts Showcase, which is very heavily orchestrated, and then Let It Dive, which is a nice little, it's a reprieve.
Yeah.
You can just calm down a bit, and it's all lovely.
There are some really nice touches, and it's just got a really nice flow to it, because it's got quite a nice chilled vibe to it by the time it gets to the last few tracks.
Mm. It's also one of those rare albums that work. The tracks work individually.
Yeah.
But they work best as part of the album.
Yes.
And with some albums that work very well as an album, the tracks themselves, you struggle to separate them.
Yes.
From the album, they kind of flounder a little bit in isolation. Yeah. Yeah. But most of the tracks on Worlds Apart still thrive when held under their own.
Yeah.
Strength, they still stand up.
Yes. Yeah.
Although listening to it from start to finish, the whole album is definitely the best way to hear it.
Mm.
It's an absolute corker. It is.
Yeah.
Kind of post rock, still a little bit of the punk vibe from the earlier albums and the kind of slightly thrashy notes.
Yeah.
But just more honed, more polished. And it's great.
I think my favourite was probably Caterwaul.
Hmm. There's a nice bit of repetition to it.
Yeah.
It just the riff just kind of it almost feels like a kind of a tornado, and it just kind of spins around and just escalates as it's going along.
One of the things I'm most drawn to, and I was saying this at a rehearsal last night, one of the things I'm most drawn to with music when I'm listening to it is what the drums are doing.
Mm.
Which is why Queens of the Stone Age is such a big thing with me. But listening to this, like Caterwaul, I was just really drawn to that.
I think
in terms of the drumming, I think I was most drawn to that. But the way all the orchestration is arranged around the drums is an important deal for me, and this really nails it.
Yeah, fair enough.
I
also really enjoy the fact that it's got a little violin piece.
Yeah,
it's out of nowhere, Ode to Mother Russia.
To Russia, my homeland.
I'm sorry, not to Russia, my homeland. Where did Ode to Mother Russia come from?
I don't know.
Out of my arse, I think it came. Yeah, to Russia, my homeland. Absolutely beautiful. I think there was a guest violinist that they had it on that. Because when I bought this album, I had the version that came with the DVD.
Okay.
And it showed bits of Conrad Keeley, one of the members of the band, one of the longest serving members of the band.
Yeah.
Composing a lot of the piano bits, he does a lot of that, and he said the woman who actually performs the violin piece for To Russia My Homeland.
Yes,
and then it shows him trying to do it on violin, making a bloody horrible racket. It kind of gives this kind of little look, kind of like a piece of piss.
Was it her violin?
I have no idea.
If that had been her violin, if I was her, I'd have been...
Yeah, that fixed smile. Please put it down.
Please put it down. You're not just ruining my violin, but you're ruining music.
But yeah, it's a wonderful piece.
Oh. It serves as a really jaunty interlude.
Mm. I mean, it's something so completely different to... anything that went before or since. I mean, there are classical moments. Classic Arts Showcase has a lot of string.
Yes.
And a kind of choral vocal work. But just the violin stand there on its own. It's a cracking piece of violin work as well.
Yes.
But it starts very simple and then has a lot of very complex changes within. It's only about 2 minutes long.
Mm. It's like I say, it's really good. It's such a complex, well put together album that I'm amazed it doesn't have more recognition.
Mm. Well, they had a moment of fame around the time of the of Madonna, the album. Every time I say Madonna, I feel like I have to clarify.
The album.
and Saw Stags and Codes did quite well as well. But I think they've always been a bit more popular in America.
Yeah.
But even then, not ridiculously. It's funny that you almost feel like they should have a bit more success. Yeah. You kind of feel that in a world where Queens of the Stone Age can have a large amount of success,
yes,
whilst making some pretty heavy and occasionally quite out there songs, then you know there are so many other bands. Why haven't they had a bite of that pie?
Yeah,
but it's just the way it goes. I mean, nothing to take away from Queens of the Stone Age; they're a fantastic band.
Not at all.
They deserve every bit of success that they've got. Which why not Trail of Dead as well?
Well, I think, and the thing is, I think the quality of Worlds Apart, the quality actually surpasses pretty much most things that I've listened to.
Mm.
I mean, even if, because I think it's a good album, I really enjoyed it. It's not, something about it isn't 100% my bag.
Mm.
But the actual quality of the recording and the quality of the music and everything is better than most things that I've listened to.
Mm. I suppose that the fact that this came out during the height of the emo craze, and it definitely fits into that whole thing, and it's got the from back when emo wasn't a dirty word.
Yeah,
it's that's when they were first hanging around.
Yeah, yeah.
Before everyone suddenly wanted an asymmetrical haircut and stripy jumper and star tattoos.
Yay.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I've justified their inclusion enough now.
I think you have.
I think anyone who disagrees with me, I will lamp them with an empty bottle of Monty's Hilltop from Offa's Dyke.
Stand by, folks. So, the next album is Rated R by the aforementioned Queens of the Stone Age. Yes. As I said in the other episode, I had real difficulty trying to pick which Queens of the Stone Age album to yammer on about. Because they all have different reasons to be considered. But I eventually settled on Rated R after asking everyone on social media to help me.
And everyone on social media being unhelpful.
Yes. No, I mean, most people said Rated R, but there was a bit of love for Like Clockwork because the quality of it was so different to anything else they've released. But I went with Rated R because I think that was the thing that set them on the path to everything else that they've recorded, essentially. Because what they started to put into motion with Rated R led to them recording Songs for the Deaf, which then led to them recording Lullabies to Paralyze, To Era Vulgaris, which we'll say not much more about.
It's not a bad album, it's just not one of the best.
Yeah. And then that then led them on to Like Clockwork, which is one of their most personal albums. It takes them into an even darker territory. There's just so much about it, and there's optimism in it as well. But that's me yammering on about the wrong album.
Yes. Which you do enjoy doing.
I do.
Should we talk about Bright Eyes for a bit? Sure. Or Shearwater?
Yeah, let's do that now. No, in fact, I'll talk about Deep Space Nine now. Rated R has... it keeps the stoner rock credentials that they presented with their self-titled album.
Which kind of felt like an extension of the Caius work that Josh had, of course, been involved in.
So you can see, you can see the evolution that's gone from Caius to Quota to Rated R. There's a progression there, certainly. I believe it, Josh Homme had said about the first album that one of the themes of the first album was repetition. And they moved on from that and actually started to create some really slick pop, but in a rock style, because you've got The Lost Art of Keeping a Secret.
Cracking bit of riff work there.
Absolutely superb. And then you have songs like Better Living Through Chemistry, which the song content of that is really strong, but it also has this really great trippy vibe about all the instrumental parts of it. And
it's quite a trippy song, which makes sense, you know, given
the title.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't adequately know how to merrily describe everything on the record, but I mean, I Think I Lost My Headache is an amazing piece of work.
No, when you did put up your little poll, my punt was for Songs for the Deaf.
Yes,
that to me is the best of Queens of Stone Age output. But I think we're coming at them from two different directions, because I came at them as a Caius fan.
Yes.
You know, I was very much into Caius.
Yes.
Some reason didn't buy the first Queens of Stone Age album, but bought Rated R. That was the first one that I bought.
Yeah.
But felt that Songs for the Deaf was the one that best married up the old Caius sound with something a bit poppier, something a bit more experimental, that kind of drew them out of the whole kind of stoner pocket. Whereas you, I think your first encounter with them was Desert Sessions, isn't it, strictly speaking?
That's a good question, actually, because I remember... I seem to remember Songs for the Deaf getting played on the stereo.
It's quite possible.
And then you...
But I do remember abandoning you in the shop with Desert Sessions Volume 9 and 10.
Yeah.
Yippee-jippee.
That was, I mean, as I was starting to experience Queens of the Stone Age, that's when, and then you laid Desert Sessions on me. And I was just really intrigued by the whole sort of, everything that Josh Homme was doing was just trying to make good music.
Mm.
And just being involved with whoever was available to make good music at the time.
That's one thing I do love about him, the fact that he will collaborate with any bugger.
Yes.
Anyone who's available that he respects to any level, which is pretty much anyone who can actually play halfway decent music.
Which
has led to some great work, some absolutely wonderful collaboration work.
Them Crooked Vultures, for example. Mm. That's a really good album.
And of course the Desert Sessions album.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope there's going to be another one, because they have a certain special quality.
Yeah, and having PJ Harvey involved with...
Oh, with the 9 and 10, which that was wonderful. I think it's some of her best work as well, the songs that she appears on.
There Will Never Be a Better Time.
Wonderful. Mm. Powdered Wig Machine and Crawl Home.
Crawl Home's fantastic.
What a tune. Anyway, we're talking about a whole irrelevant album again.
See, we've done it again. So one of their cult hits is the thing that starts Rated R, so you got Feel Good Hit of the Summer.
Mm.
Which...
It's a proper gonzo rock song, that, isn't it?
It doesn't
get much dumber, and yet it's a smart kind of dumb.
It's
like Party Hard by Andrew WK. You know, it's a dumb that the person knows how dumb it is.
Yeah,
but they're a smart person and they know how to push that dumb.
That's the thing that
these logical conclusions.
That is the thing that I really liked about Josh Homme and Queens of the Stone Age is. That's a really good way of putting it. They're a smart kind of dumb, because they really play it when they don't really mean it.
Yeah.
Then you got Lost Art of Keeping a Secret. You got Leg of Lamb, which is Rated R's. It feels like Rated R's answer to You Would Know from the first record.
Mm.
They've both got a very similar sort of vibe to them.
I love Leg of Lamb.
Looking through the track listing of this particular album, you suddenly realise what gems that you've got that you forgot about. You've got Monsters in the Parasol, and then you've got the Nick Oliveri classics, Quicken to the Pointless and Tension Head.
Tension Head, I think, was actually the first track I heard off the album. I think it was on a compilation that I got from Kerrang or something mental.
Yeah.
And, it's a cracking number, that is.
It's great.
It properly lays into it.
It's really funny because I don't like screamy music generally.
Whereas I do.
Yeah.
I love a bit of screaming.
Whereas I just make an exception for the Nick Oliveri tracks on the Queens of the Stone Age albums.
Mm.
And then, we've talked before about I Think I Lost My Headache. 2.5 minutes of it is perfect rock, pop, stoner kind of stuff.
Mm.
And then the next 3 or 4 minutes are just flugelhorn and...
Oh, yes, yes, we have. I don't know how you can work with this.
Happy
memories.
But it's great, and it paved the way for them to make Songs for the Deaf.
Yeah.
So, it set, without Rated R, it set them on the course to make what is arguably one of their best albums.
Mm. Well, it's definitely when they were in their pomp.
Yes.
You know, it's when they definitely found their furrow and were ploughing it merrily.
Yeah.
So it's a cracking album.
And then it led to them getting all like the sets of like Reading Festival and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I'd never expected. I didn't see it coming. That Josh Homme would become the internationally recognised rock superstar that he is today.
I don't think he saw it coming, because you see him at some of those sets and he's just. Yeah.
It was just the big ginger lumberjack from Caius. It's like, where's all this come from?
Yeah. I think Rated R is the thing that kicked it all off. Which is why I picked it for my favourite post-2000s
album. My favourite is Songs for the Deaf, but I recognise Rated R for what it is. You know, it's the album where they found their sound.
Yeah.
And it's a corking album as well. Yeah, it's an absolute blinder.
To be honest, my favourite album is Lullabies to Paralyse.
Mm.
And this is why. There's all sorts of different reasons I could have picked a Queens of the Stone Age album to be my favourite.
Yeah.
But I had to try and just pick a reason, and I thought, well, seeing as we're talking about top 100 album lists and in some sort of distanced official sort of capacity, there's a lot that I can hand rated on.
Mm.
So there it is.
I can't be buggered with any of that distancing nonsense. But, do I like it? Yes. It's going in!
And
shot it! It's going in the bloody list.
So, there we go.
Yeah,
I would recommend both of those albums.
I'd recommend this beer as well. It's very pleasant.
Yes.
Monty's Hilltop. From where, John?
From where? Offa's Dyke.
Yay! Titter. You are a titter. Yeah.
So that's all for this week.
Cracking. Yes. And yeah. It is all from this week from us for this week.
From us.
This week from us. What? I don't know anymore. Shall we just let's call it a night. Laters.
You have been listening to All Yesterday's Parties.
Woo!
Thanks.
I believe that's what you're telling them. We're hosted by Audio Boom, John.
It is, isn't it?
It is.
Also, the music is by Attack of the Vapors.
Album coming soon.